Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim.
Danielle, is the Fed's pause on hiking interest rates a positive sign?
That really depends on where you sit. That is kind of an inevitable conclusion to the fastest hiking cycle that we've seen in, you know, since the 1980s. And they are not calling it a pause, Jim. I think they specifically said, let's not call it a pause. He said, let's call it a skip. Well, I shouldn't call it a skip. I think he was really in semantics there yesterday, because so many of the talking heads have been telling everyone that a Fed pause is bullish, right? Bullish for markets, bullish for the economy, as if it's the elixir that magically solves all of the issues if they just start, you know, stop hiking rates. But as I've been explaining, and many others have as well, it's not a function of, you know, instant gratification when they start to when they pause the hiking cycle, because we've got this 12 to 18 month lag of all the, you know, the tightening that's happened since March of 22 is hardly even through the economy yet in terms of the slowing impacts on demand and the crunch on cash. So it's not surprising that they have paused, given that the inflationary data has come down significantly, you know, from a peak of 9%, 8% in June of 2022. We've seen it come down to, you know, half that. And the biggest component of it, Jim, is the housing, which is about a third of CPI. So housing costs are reflected both in rents and owner equivalent rents, which is the version they use to figure out how much it costs to own your house. So the fact that prices have gone up so much, that mortgage costs have gone up so much, has reflected in this big spike, and landlords were trying to increase rents dramatically to, you know, adjust for the increase in their borrowing costs and the price being too high when they bought it. They were not investment grade. They were barely cash flow positive, as we've discussed before. So the problem the Fed faces now is they've got this. Well, you know, they really have to get housing costs down. If they're trying to get the CPI from 4 to 2, which is the current state of affairs, they really have to get that third of housing to come off significantly. That's, of course, very interest rate sensitive. And so they can't afford to have, you know, we saw as rates sort of came off the boil in terms of bonds, when they sort of began to have the yields come down, then you got a big resurgence in frenzied activity in housing in places like Canada and some cities in the United States. We've got the worst affordability since the 1960s, at least. So they really want to quell the, you know, investor euphoria and speculation going on in the housing sector. And rents have started to deflate, not in every place, but in aggregate they have. And that's moving in the right direction, because there's more properties coming up for rent And, of course, high prices curing high prices. We had a lot of people consolidating households, staying with family, you know, having roommates, moving to cheaper areas. All that alleviates the pressure on the rental market. And then as you've got all these condos coming on in many of the major sectors, which were primarily bought by quote-unquote investors for rental purposes, they're all coming on the market still, you know, so over the next year that supply is going to increase. So all of that is positive in terms of suppressing the price of and the shelter component of CPI that will help move them forward. Even the Fed's forward estimates have, you know, over the next year that CPI is coming down into the 2% target. As I say, if you X out housing right now, it's already very close to that because all the other constituents in the basket, for example, commodity prices are off significantly over the last year. And that's a huge part of it. Trucking, packaging, shipping, all these things that were really inflating costs during the COVID pandemic have come off sharply. In fact, in some cases, in things like shipping containers and stuff, they've given back the entire inflation that we saw during the pandemic has come right back down again. So all that is helping in this disinflationary trend, but they've still got this problem that every time there's still a huge amount of investor euphoria, animal spirits alive and well. And every time that they, you know, even if it's a misaligned or a mistaken understanding, for example, that the pause has always been, you know, a bullish sign for markets, when in fact historically it's the opposite. It's been the worst of the economic decline and the worst of the stock market decline has always come after the Fed pause. But because people don't do any homework and there's a lot of retail crowd and, you know, YouTube heroes and all this sort of just spouting off whatever on the internet these days, the retail crowd is really, you know, yanked around by greed, and there's a lot of greed right now. The CNN greed index is right back near the all-time highs. So all that said, the I think Chair Powell is trying to, you know, trying to walk back that euphoria, knowing that he can't get the CPI down to target if we keep having these you know, ballooning issues and speculation in asset markets. So he's kind of up against a rock and a hard place. In the one hand, he's trying to have a legacy of being the guy who restored normalcy in interest rates, and I applaud him for that. I think, you know, I didn't believe that they had the chutzpah, or led by him in particular, to increase interest rates from 0.25 to 5 in a matter of, you know, 15 months. I was wrong, like most people, and didn't think they would have the courage to do it that sharply. But having said that, now that we're here, I am glad we're here. And I am glad we're here because the other condition that persisted for a decade of QE and zero rates was so destructive, so unhealthy, so unreal, artificial, you know, incenting all the wrong behaviors, eroding productivity. It was just a nightmare for anyone that follows math and actually does analysis. So I'm happy that we're back at a more normalized rate. He's also doing QT, let's not forget, this ongoing quantitative tightening where he's trying to run down the assets they purchased during the COVID liquidity infusions, and they've got these trillions of assets they're trying to get off the Fed balance sheet, and that's taking liquidity out of the system. At the same time, you've got the U.S. Federal Reserve now with the debt ceiling resolved, having to sell a bunch of T-bills, like a half a trillion bucks over the next several months, and that's going to take liquidity cash out of the financial system as well. So I think all things considered, he's saying it's a wait and see. He said, you know, I don't think he wanted to call it a pause yesterday because he didn't want to ignite animal spirits. Well, that's happening again today a bit. We see the tech mania, you know, lift off again, and the broad indices being pushed up by the AI concentrated companies. So that's sort of working at cross purposes again. But when I think the more interesting thing too, he said, was that, you know, we don't see interest rate cuts coming for a couple of years. Now there's a ballsy statement. Like, I'm thinking to myself, well, I hope you're right. Like, I honestly think it would be great if they didn't cut rates extremely, and we had this cleansing period, which is so needed. If they held rates, you know, at the current level for the next 2 years, and let chips fall where they should, which is the highly levered would be carried out. The zombie companies that have been kept alive through all these years of constantly intervening and propping them up, all these reckless behaviors would be punished. in that environment, and we would ultimately reset the economy and the financial markets for a period of great productivity and prosperity. It would be awesome. So I would love to believe that he's right when he says that they're not going to cut rates for a long time. The financial markets currently are not priced for that, of course. It's certainly not on the stock side. They are still expecting to be, you know, the way they've been bailed out and rescued so many times since, you know, the 2007 top, that behavior of expecting they're constantly be given, you know, cheap money to save them all, that expectation is alive and well. So until that's crushed, we're going to have to wait patiently for value to be restored. The good news is that I think we're probably not that far away from the reality hitting, that the recession is probably here now, that the profit cycle's in a major downturn, that we have a lot of give back to do. And, you know, let's not kid ourselves. The main stock market has been in a bear market since 2021, has gone nowhere year to date. You know, 493 or so of the S&P 500 companies have not gone up in this rally that's happened year to date. It's been led by this handful of AI companies, Jim. And the AI companies is so reminiscent of 2000, you know. It's like, you know, we've touched on, you know, the semiconductor mania around companies like NVIDIA. That's all fine and well, but the new orders and sales are going in the opposite direction. So they're all down while the stock prices have leapt. You know, something like NVIDIA is now at 221 times reported earnings. So there's no math being done here. At the same time, you know, the high-yield bond junk index, so that's the corporate debt side of these sort of more high-risk companies, has barely moved since the stock market low last October. While stocks rallied, led by this handful of tech companies, you know, the Russell 2000 is still down sharply, did not participate in this to any large degree, and the high-yield debt basket, which is the price of the bonds of many of these companies, has barely moved off the October 22 low. So that has not confirmed this euphoria that's happened in this handful of stocks. So all of that to say, I think they did the right thing to pause and let the lags of what they've done to date filter through the economy. I'd love to believe they're not going to start cutting in the near future. Typically, the lag is at least 6 months, 5 to 6 months from the pause to when they would even start cutting. That's the historical norm. If he wants to wait longer this time, I say bring it on, but it's going to be, I think, painful. And I question whether they'll have the resolve once unemployment rises, which it always does. In the Fed's own forecast has unemployment rising more than 1% over the next year. Well, that's never happened without being in the context of a recession. And we've never had a recession where the central banks didn't bother, you know, stood pat indefinitely and let all the carnage happen and didn't try and go back to rescuing.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. So much attention is being paid to AI. Some people say it will be the doom of humanity. Others say it's going to solve a lot of problems. Do you have a take on it? Is it really what each individual application is put up to?
Sure. I mean, I think it has the prospect for great good. I put a podcast on my blog earlier this week about the incredible benefits of AI and complementary in terms of health analysis and being proactive in healthcare and helping, you know, in collaboration with humans, the doctors and specialists in certain fields, to give, you know, unprecedented biometric feedback and recommend strategies and lifestyle adjustments and things that can really help, you know, either reduce or eradicate the onset of disease, make longevity so much longer, and health health that much stronger. So there's a lot of really positive things that can come from it. There's no question about it. And, you know, as with everything, everything's got the ups and the downside, and there's certainly downside risks as well. But, you know, I would like to remain optimistic in thinking that it's ideally going to help more than hurt, but, you know, that all remains to be seen. We'll have to make some wise choices, and some regulatory issues have to be resolved.
Should people be careful about just pouring money into AI? Because I remember the 2000.com bust where most of those companies went under.
Oh, absolutely. And that doesn't, you know, it's so clear that the technology, things like the internet, semiconductors, those were all critical to the evolution of the internet and the very, you know, fiber optic networks that we all came to use in the last 20 years. But that didn't mean that buying stocks at the all-time high when they were priced for having to give, you know, every dollar of sales to their shareholders for the next 20 years, which is impossible because companies have a lot of overhead. So, you know, paying that kind of multiple for things just makes no sense. And that's exactly, you know, the situation today. And also, you know, it's very familiar for me to hear the same talking heads on TV talking about how they see things like the demographics being so favorable for, you know, that all these baby boomers are going to start spending their money in retirement, and that's going to be so stimulative for the economy. Well, the thing is that they are definitely well past their peak spending years, even if they take a couple of trips a year, or, you know, most of them have already bought these secondary homes, which they're more likely to be looking to sell than to acquire more of. They're past their, you know, child rearing, their household formation, all that. That's when the peak spending of that cohort or any cohort happens. So that's all behind us. And now we're also seeing them needing to take cash flow or take liquidity or sell properties, sell financial assets in order to take cash out to support their living. So that's all, you know, not particularly supportive of things like financial markets. So even if they are going to be spending to add some demand in the economy, that's awesome, but that doesn't mean that it's fundamentally supportive of the stock market, for example. And we saw so many of these same themes in the 2007 top and the 2000 top, and of course, you know, the recession takes some time to start. The inverted yield curve, which has a perfect record for predicting these things, it works at a lag of more than a year typically. So, you know, by the time the recession starts, you hear a lot of people saying, well, where is it? You know, you've been saying that and it hasn't come and all that. Well, that's because it's a slow-moving machine and it comes in at a lag. And by then, of course, you know, by the time it's officially recognized and declared, you have already got a lot of the downside impacts hitting things like financial markets. So that's why you have to be so proactive and looking forward to try and mitigate your risk, to try and avoid the worst of the drawdowns, to be aware of cycles, to be understanding that, you know, it's not the pause that signals the all clear sign. In fact, that's what signals that it's about to get a lot worse. And just being aware that under the hood, the bulk of the asset markets have not participated in the gain. I mean, look at the TSX. We have such a tiny, component of technology or, you know, the tech sector in our benchmark indices that, you know, our rally year to date has been, you know, 3%, so just a minuscule relative to that. And not only that, again, if you look at since the 2008 peak, the Canadian stock market has been god awful. You know, it has rallied in different points and then given it all back. I put a great chart about for my partner Corey on the blog on June the 6th about that, but just showing, you know, that this sideways motion from the big drawdown of, you know, more than 50% in the 2008 downturn, just like the Nasdaq sold off so significantly after the last peak of dropping 80% and then spent 15 years going nowhere, that's what you get after these kind of overbought, overvalued extremities, all the hype and not enough math being done. And the same thing happened with the TSX, where, you know, we didn't reclaim the 2008 high until really we were into the pandemic. It finally broke out of that that range marginally from 2021, you know, into 2022, and it's been it's sold off since. So I just caution people that the bear market is still alive and well. It's a live thesis. It's still not nearly done in terms of, you know, cleaning out the madness that has persisted now for some time. And bankruptcy filings are up over 105% year over year in the United States, just as an example. You know, the U.S. dollar, for example, the U.S. dollar index is down significantly today because evidently the currency markets are believing the Fed that this is a pause. In other words, that they're not likely to be increasing rates significantly from here. The bond market is rallying today, the Treasury market, not the junk debt. I'm talking about the Treasury market. It's rallying today again in suggestion that they believe the Fed is nearly done its tightening cycle. But, you know, stocks are still in a land of their own dreaming. And until they get the memo that they're not going to be bailed out as quickly this time, if we take Mr. Powell at his word, then, you know, we should be prepared for the worst of the bear market yet to come.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.